Welcome into a Monday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. We are recapping back-to-back losses to the Grizzlies and Wizards. And to get this done in the most efficient way possible, and because we are no longer on speaking terms, just kidding. It was just more convenient. Josh and I each took a game, so I covered the Grizzlies, he covered the Wizards, and we broke them down for you guys. So I'm going to start off talking about a heartbreaker of a loss against Memphis, then we'll cut to Josh, and he will talk about that tire fire of a Wizards game, and we'll finish it up with maybe some quick thoughts on Nets-Cavs this week, and some notes on future podcasts we are going to have this week. That next on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover your Brooklyn Nets. We are talking Nets-Grizzlies. It was just another brutal loss. We've already recorded the Tuesday podcast. I know, weird podcast time stuff for you guys, but in it, Josh makes the point, and I think it's relevant, and I'm going to preempt it by a day, just blatantly steal it from him, that most teams don't have losses like the Nets have had to the Sixers and Grizzlies over the course of a season. I think he said there are teams that haven't had losses like that in five seasons, which I don't know. I'd have to do more research to confirm, but again, just utterly brutal. The Nets are up by 10 with 3.5 minutes left. They are up by 7 with 33 seconds left. And the Grizzlies' rookie power forward, Jaren Jackson Jr., who is an absolute talent, finishes this game with 36 points. He gets a 4-point play courtesy of some poor defense from Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. And then the Nets' inbound woes, which are just inexplicable at this point. I don't know how they don't have a set where you just get a guy open, and that sounds oversimplistic, but every single team in the NBA can do it with relative ease regardless of the situation. Every single team in youth basketball can generally do it relatively easy, so I don't know what the excuse is there. The Nets, it's burned them now in, I think, three straight games. They just cannot get the ball, or three of the last four games, excuse me, they can just not get the ball in key moments, and they commit a turnover. Grizzlies come back down. Jaren Jackson hits a big three. The Nets don't really have much of an idea for a final play other than let's just ISO Spencer Dinwiddie, which in their defense has worked in the past. Dinwiddie, I think, attacks a little bit too late. I'm generally a fan of players going with about 8 or 9 seconds left. So then if you get some penetration and a defense just goes into a mad scramble to stop you at the rim, which a lot of teams do because you kind of panic in those situations, you can kick it out and you can start a little bit of a passing sequence that if you play it right and the defense panics and they're not smart, you can get a wide open shot. Instead, Dinwiddie goes to the rim, is essentially triple teamed and gets stripped by Conley, and it ends with him begging for a foul call, which, again, don't want to take shots at our guy Spencer because he's a fan favorite on this podcast, but was just super frustrating to see in the closing moments of this one. And I genuinely am starting to think that the Sixers' loss and what has just been a terrible stretch of basketball since Caris LeVert has gotten hurt, with some bright spots, like again, the Nets had some really good moments in this game and there are some real positives, and we'll get into those shortly. But I think the close losses combined with the fact that this was the Nets' fifth loss in a row, or at least it seemed like it could have been, and particularly, I think the Sixers' loss, all of those factors and not having LeVert there to bail them out to some degree, I think are contributing to the Nets kind of getting in their own collective head, in these close games. And it is obviously not great going forward. And I think it's part of the reason they were so listless against Washington, because that double OT game, I mean, physically and mentally, and again, just right after that Philly loss, I think it was just a total backbreaker. And I think if you were smart, you would have put a lot of money against the Nets being competitive in that Washington game, because it just they didn't really have much left emotionally after this one. It was really hard to watch, especially because in OT they also had some real chances to win. There was certainly a window there. They were up by 4 with 40 seconds left in overtime number 1, and they end up just totally misplaying a pick and roll, particularly Spencer Dinwiddie and Jared Allen. They switch it a little bit early, and maybe I might have missed something on that play, but I don't know how Allen ends up on Mike Conley, and the result was inevitable. Conley just wrecks him off the dribble, and I mean, you can blame Jared Allen for switching onto him. You can't blame him for not being able to cover Mike Conley. That's just not going to happen. It all kind of sucked. I guess is a really succinct way of summing it up. But the ending kind of sucked, because there were some positives in this game. And I think the Nets, at least offensively, largely played a very, very strong game. They had 6 players with at least 15 points, which just doesn't happen all that often in an NBA game. Obviously, the double overtime was a factor. And I thought a number of guys had some of their best efforts of the season. Damari Carroll, I thought it was clearly his best game of the year. Hit his first 3 three-pointers, finished with 21 points, 12 rebounds, 38 minutes. It was a vintage Damari Carroll Nets game, which tells you the state of the franchise, that is something I can say while maintaining a straight face. But yeah, he was awesome in this one, shooting the ball well. And it was honestly cool. It was cool to see him have a good game. I hope he has more of those, because that's the only way the Nets are going to be able to trade him for anything. And frankly, they need that kind of shooting, because without Caris LeVert, their offense essentially boils down to D'Lo and Dinwiddie breaking down defenses, and you're just hoping and praying guys can hit open shots. And Carroll in this game, he was absolutely excellent. He was on the money. I thought he was awesome. Shabazz Napier, a guy who didn't shoot the ball well, 4-14, and had a couple of really bad air balls, but I just thought he played a good game and was aggressive and had the right mindset from the onset of this one. Got to the free throw line 8 times, hit all 8 of them. I thought he was really, really tough in this one, and just a guy the Nets kind of consistently need to bring the production off the bench, and he was great. Jared Allen, he was good. 15 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, had some excellent plays finishing. I don't know if the box score is necessarily representative of the effort from him. I didn't really love what he did defensively in this one, as has been the case all season, but offensively, all you can ask for him, hyper efficient, some really smart passes on the short roll, which again is a skill that we've kind of emphasized he's going to have to continue to develop. And in this game, he was really smart, and he made a couple of good plays when put into playmaking situations. So is that an oxymoron? Maybe. But he was very good. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, a guy who has been playing his best basketball of late. Not that he was particularly impressive against the Wizards, but outside of that, he's been better as a starter, shooting over 50% from the field, hovering right around 53% over the 4-game stretch heading into that Wizards outing. And I'm just loving what he is doing around the rim. His ability, propensity for acrobatics, and his ability to just kind of hang and just get some really nice arm extension around the basket. And it just looked really intuitive and really in balance. And it just seemed like he was out of rhythm at the start of the season, not really being healthy for the majority of training camp. And then he comes on in these last 4 games, getting into that starting role, able to get his rhythm going early, and he looks good around the bucket. Again, there are all these, factors inherent to his game that make him relatively inefficient. Doesn't shoot the 3-ball well, doesn't get to the line enough, has not been as good defensively as you want, and I think, and we're going to get into this actually on our next podcast, talking about the Nets free agents and which guys could potentially get dealt. But I still have very real issues with him as a player, but I think he has been the best version of himself over these last couple of games, which purely in the context of this single season, I think is the most you can ask for from Hollis-Jefferson. I could probably go a little deeper on this game. I don't know if I want to, just because it was such a bummer, and watching it was not the most joyful experience. D'Angelo Russell, mostly terrible before the overtimes. finished the game 10 of 27, a ridiculous 5 of 14 from 3, had 8 assists, which were essentially offset by 8 turnovers. Actually was really good defensively in terms of being proactive on that end. I don't think his one-on-one defense was great, as he was part of the effort that allowed Mike Conley to finish with 37 points, but did have 3 steals, including a big one with about 40 seconds left that ended up putting the Nets up by 7. And it was right after, I think it might have been right after he missed the free throw. I don't know. I might be getting my order wrong on that, but it was an awesome play to anticipate a pass to Conley, jump in and intercept it. And then in the second overtime, he was the only reason the Nets stayed in it, hit a bunch of really tough shots. So he'll take his lumps, and we'll give him a little bit of credit as well. I thought Jared Dudley was 19 minutes, 0 for 2, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. He just looks totally washed after a decent start to the season. I didn't even realize, they pointed out on the broadcast, how bad he's been from three-point range, right around 30% at this point. Just absolutely atrocious. And if he's not hitting threes, there is really essentially no reason to have him on the floor. All right, that is it for our Nets Grizzlies recap. I'm going to send it to Kips Bay for Josh with his recap of Nets Wizards next on Locked On Nets.
Segment 2 on the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh Bass going solo here for the quick review of this Wizards-Nets game. And I'll keep it brief just because the game was so bad. But Nets lose 102-88 to a Washington team that they beat a couple weeks ago down in D.C. as well. This one was really just terrible. I think the Nets came out flat from the start. You could tell that the collapse the night before against the Grizzlies definitely took a toll on them. I mean, just had zero energy. And I think a big problem that we see, especially without Joe Harris, is that on the wings position for the Nets, these guys are so reliant on just sprinting off of screens. And if the offense isn't as crisp as it normally is, they just don't have the one-on-one talent to beat anyone. I thought Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell were both awful. Jared Allen, 6 points on 3 of 4 shooting, 5 turnovers, 8 rebounds. You know, I hate to say it, but at this point, his stats look good, and he's definitely made a nice jump in terms of his efficiency and his rebounding, but it's kind of empty calorie stats for me. And, you know, I know a lot about empty calories because I have the biggest sweet tooth in the world, but, you know, he just doesn't make the impact that you'd want from a guy like him with his athleticism on the defensive end. He's still pretty robotic. There were a couple plays in the third quarter where Markieff Morris was going at him. And I know Markieff Morris has a big speed advantage on Jared Allen, but it seemed like Markieff would start his drive and then Jared Allen would react a second later. And, you know, his defense, people can go at him one-on-one and just get easy buckets. So I'd like to see some improvement from him definitely the rest of this season. And, you know, this is the type of game where it's clear the Nets have no shot at making the playoffs, especially since LeVert's going to be out for the next month or two. It just sucks to see because this is reminiscent of games the last couple of years. Shabazz Napier going 2 of 13 from the field. Just really no positive signs. I'm happy our boy Rhodey Kuduz was able to get some time. 8 points for him, 2 of 7 from the field. He struggled with his outside shot, but it's clear that he makes stuff happen. And I really hope that the Nets are 8-16 now. Maybe Kenny Atkinson gives him a try at with some consistent rotation minutes, because at this point, there's no real reason to have Jared Dudley playing. Like, we're not going to get anything for him. He's just kind of a disaster to watch on the court. I mean, he's not horrible considering how slow and how old he is. He could be a lot worse. He does a decent job, but there's just no upside to playing him. So I'd like to see Kuritz get a little bit more time and really get some more energy in there. And even though he's going to make a lot of mistakes, he's going to screw up and he's going to turn the ball over. But, you know, we need some sort of wing that can create their own shot and hit jumpers. And he's proven he can do a decent job at that. And I'm really sick of watching guys like Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, who for whatever reason just thinks he's this ISO scorer and can't get anything going. I mean, he's so inefficient. Was 2 of 9 on 2-point field goal attempts on Saturday night's game. He did hit a 3, but, you know, he's really fallen off a cliff this year, and I don't see any way he's going to be back with the team next year, and me and Gavin will get into that a bit on the next segment, but really disappointing to see. You know, it just, the Nets shot 8 of 33 from 3-pointers, 37% from the field total, 17 turnovers, just completely sluggish. There was no point they were really getting back into it. I mean, they cut the lead to 8 or 9 towards the middle end of the third quarter, early fourth. But, you know, even seeing a guy like John Wall, who's not the best offensive player, he has his flaws, certainly. He's really not the most efficient scorer. But at the same time, what he has that D'Angelo Russell doesn't is that John Wall can just have the ball 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock, nothing going, and just turn on the Jets when he wants to and beat his man and draw a foul. He did that a couple times. And that's really what Russell doesn't have, and Spencer Dinwiddie does, and why I like Dinwiddie a lot for this Nets team. But, you know, I think defense at the point guard and both guard positions were pretty bad. I thought Dinwiddie's defense, you know, he has a lot of potential because he's 6'6 and with pretty good speed. And when he gives a damn, he can be pretty darn good on that end. I think the last 10 or 15 games, his defensive efforts really waned. Just doesn't have the intensity getting over ball screens. A couple plays where he could help and he doesn't. So, you know, he's not good enough as an offensive player to just mail it in on defense. So I'd really hope that he really kicks it back up into gear. And who knows, maybe he's a bit fatigued or just because he's carrying a big load on offense for a lot of the game. But, you know, I think when he does play defense and locks in on that end and he's a plus, he can be a really good overall player. But he's just not at the point where he can't give a damn on defense. And, you know, I'm really down on this Nets team right now. We're sitting at 8-16. There's no one on the roster. I mean, LeVert definitely was looking like a good player and could be a potential all-star down the line, but no one else on this Nets team is really wowing me. I think Spencer Dinwiddie can top out as a really good six-man or serviceable starter. And if he gets that $12 million a year extension, I think that's a really good value. But D'Angelo Russell, I still am just not sold on the guy. I think he's just way too inconsistent, and he's never been able to score efficiently. And if you can't score efficiently as a point guard, you need to be able to be an incredible passer. And he's a good passer, but he just doesn't have the speed to break down the defense and then make those kick-out passes. So even though he has great vision in the world, if you can't open up those lanes by sucking in the defense, it's really pointless. So we'll see what happens with him. Maybe he can pick it up. I don't think he's going to have a magic speed increase when he's 22, and who knows, maybe he could get some sort of power like the guy from, what was the movie, was it Little Big League or one of those where the kid breaks his arm and all of a sudden he can throw 104 miles an hour. Maybe that will happen with D'Angelo Russell, but I think it's pretty unlikely. And if the magic doesn't happen, and not talking about the Orlando Magic, I just don't see him ever being more than a microwave bench scorer. But who knows? Maybe he'll have a good career and he'll carve something out and he'll make some more improvements to his game. But I just feel 4 seasons in, there's really just been marginal improvements, if any. And it's not something I want to give a big contract to. But we shall see. So we'll take a break here and then come back, me and Gavin together, reuniting the boys for one of our final times, and get you some more Nets coverage after this disappointing weekend stretch.
All right, third and final segment. I know I'm bummed out too. It's just me. We decided to push what was going to be the final segment of this podcast to its own podcast tomorrow, and that is because we spent 20 minutes on something we were supposed to spend at most 10 talking about, and that's because it was an interesting subject. We're going to get into the Nets' season-long trajectory following 6 consecutive losses, and hint, hint, it's going to be closer to the tank direction, and we're going to talk about how the Nets are going to treat the impending free agencies of Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, with a particular focus on Russell. And I know to some degree those are subjects we touch on all the time, but I think we might have had a little breakthrough in our closing days of doing this podcast together, and we went a little further down the road talking about D'Lo's free agency in particular, what teams he could maybe fit on if the Nets wanted to trade him at the deadline, which we sort of think is a possibility. All right, I don't want to spoil too much of it. That's coming out, should come out tomorrow unless we decide to do a Cavs recap if that game is exceptionally exciting. I don't think it will be. I guess some quick thoughts on the Cavs game. It's one that the Nets absolutely should win and must win, but I'll say this. I think if you want to gauge if this team is broken in some irreparable way and that they'd potentially start selling off assets sooner rather than later, a loss to this Cavs team would do it. And I know the Nets are talent deficient right now. I think everyone would agree that Cleveland is worse off, if anything, and does not have the Nets organization, does not have the Nets coaching, does not have the Nets infrastructure with all the guys they have back from last season. So this is a game the Nets shouldn't lose under just about any condition. And if they do, I think that's when you start looking at, okay, who can we deal? What's everyone's trade value now? And just about everyone is on the table in a potential trade, with the exception of LeVert, Allen, I would argue Dinwiddie, maybe some would argue to the contrary, and then maybe the rookies as well. Though, again, you get the right package, you think you could get a high pick in this year's draft, maybe Musa and Kurucs aren't that safe. So I think a loss to Cleveland would trigger that kind of reaction, and frankly, I think it would be warranted. And to some degree, I would guess that the Nets are already putting out those feelers, and that is going to happen regardless of what happens in tomorrow's game, because this is very clearly not a playoff team. But more on that tomorrow on Locked On Nets. We really appreciate you guys tuning in, and we're going to try and kill it for you this week as much as we can. I can't promise that we're going to have a podcast after every single game, but we will get you at least two more this week in what is a very busy time for me in particular. And Josh is always insanely busy, so we're doing our best to make it work. But it's our final week together, so we don't want to go out without putting together a few more bangers for you guys. And we really appreciate your continued loyalty and you guys continuing to listen. On that note, happy Monday. Hope you're off to a great start to your week.